Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm Josh Horowitz. This is a podcast. You are listening to it in your ears, I hope. I don't know through what other orifice you would hear this. That's a medical issue that I cannot address in the time that I have allotted here. Welcome to the show. Welcome aboard this week's guest. I won't even tease it. Why should I tease it? Because when you clicked on this, you probably saw the name. So there's no point in me being coy. The guest today is Mr. Jack Black, actor, comedian, mini mogul. He's produced a lot of stuff, so I can call him that, and star of The D-Train, a new movie out in theaters, which you should seek out. But I'll get to that in a second. First, let me catch you up on what's going on in my universe. Been back home this week. Busy week. Taped Mr. Black for the podcast, did some interviews with, oh, here's a movie I want to recommend. You've probably heard about this one if you're in the know. Ex Machina, great sci-fi thriller, exploration of AI. You know, it's kind of a futuristic tale, but really not like, this is not Blade Runner, this is not hundreds of years in the future, this is like what could happen 5 years from now. It's directed by Alex Garland, who wrote Sunshine and The Beach. This is his first directing effort. Excellent movie. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Especially, there's actually a good amount of really quality movies, given that we're in May, which, frankly, usually we have to wait till September, I feel like, to get some really good movies. But I would recommend Ex Machina. The reason I mention it is I got a chance to interview Alicia Vikander. I believe that's how you pronounce her name. I think it's Alicia because that's how she introduced herself to me. And Donald Gleason. Donald Gleason, you may know for an underrated movie, About Time. I would recommend that. He's also going to be the new Star Wars film. Got a chance to talk to them about this one. Some of the content is up on MTV's YouTube channel. Seek it out for an interview with them. What else is going on? Saw some good movies. I'm obsessing about, I can't talk about it yet because the embargo's not up, but the fact that I'm obsessing about Mad Max Fury Road should tell you all you need to know. We'll get into that in a few days, next week, trust me. And not much else. I'm catching up on some TV. Have you guys watched The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt? I'm like five episodes in. I'm gonna crank through the rest in the next few days. I'm loving it, from the same team that brought you 30 Rock. I'm a little late to the bandwagon, I get it, but I've been busy with movies, what can I say? So before we get into Mr. Jack Black, as always, hit me up on Twitter, send me your questions, and without any further ado, let's dive into a question this week from Mary's World. Well, Mary's World, here's your question. Josh, what does Tom Hiddleston smell like? I'm guessing fresh cut grass and lemons. Excellent guess. I don't recall him smelling like fresh cut grass and lemons. I probably don't remember much of an odor, which is a good thing. Usually you don't want to remember the odor of somebody. That's usually a negative connotation. Here's my Tom Hiddleston odor-related anecdote, as it were. Really, it's not much odor-related, but you'll see where I'm going with this. I once had so it's one thing to like interview people in interview context. They come to you, you go to them, yada yada. I was out in Los Angeles. I live in New York, and I was out in Los Angeles. I was actually going to do a bit with Tom a sketch in LA a couple years ago the next day, and I went to the hotel gym, and I work out occasionally, okay? Stop judging me. I was leaving the gym, and who walked in but Tom? So that's unusual. I don't know how you guys feel about running into people you know at the gym. I don't feel good about it. I don't want to see my coworkers, my friends, my loved ones, anyone I even remotely know at the gym. I just don't. Let alone an actor I really respect. Tom, if you're listening, it was great to see you, but I wasn't necessarily looking to see you at the gym. Now I can say it. And he was lovely, but what happened then, it was, oh, here's the other thing. We were the only two people in the gym. We were literally the only two people in the gym. So he walks in, I'm on my way out, then I feel compelled to stop and we're talking, and I just have this vivid memory, we're sitting on like the mats, just talking for like 20 minutes as he's stretching, I'm pretending like I'm not done with my workout. Like, should I just stay here? Are we just chit-chatting at a gym for an hour? What do I do? How does this end? So it's not really odor-related, except that I associate gymnasiums, as it were, with odors. And I don't remember him smelling sweaty or anything, though he had just arrived at the gym, so why would he smell? I probably smelled. I was leaving the gym. So Tom smells great. In answer to your question. Thanks for your question. And keep them coming in. Send them to me at Joshua Horowitz with the hashtag happy, sad, confused. Okay, back to the order at hand, the event of the day, which is Jack Black. So thrilled that Jack came into my office to chat last week. I've done a lot with Jack over the years. He is always game for... He's just like a great personality. He's one of those guys. I feel like I say this a lot, but the people I always gravitate towards, A, they need to have a sense of humor. B, they need to have a sense of humor about themselves. C, it's better if what you see is what you get. And that's exactly what Jack is. He's as you would expect him to be. I mean, Colin, who's probably listening to this, our photographer was there, and he said to me afterwards, like, that's exactly what I hoped he would be like. So Colin, see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Those are the good ones. Jack is in a new movie called The D Train, which we don't reveal too much in this, so don't worry about spoilers. There's been a lot of talk about this one in that there are some twists and turns in it. The less you know going in, the better. So I'm not going to say too much except to say that Jack's in it, James Marsden's in it. It's a little bit fucked up in a good way. It's produced by Mike White, who did Chuck and Buck way back when. So that could give you a little hint of where the story's going. It's a dark, slightly subversive, edgy, weird comedy that I highly, highly, highly recommend. Also worth noting, Jack's got a new show called The Brink, which I've seen the first two episodes of. We don't really talk too much about it, except keep an eye out. It comes out in about a month or so on HBO. Really cool cast, directed by Jay Roach of Austin Powers fame. And it's kind of got a little Dr. Strangelove-ish vibe to it. It's a political satire comedy. Good stuff from Jack Black. Always an entertaining guest and always a great performer. I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. I know I did. Enjoy Mr. Jack Black. Yeah, that's an entrance. Yeah. I would expect nothing less.
Look at you.
Don't worry about it.
Stay there.
Okay. We're going to do it over here?
Yeah, this is what we need.
This is like a papal. What are we doing? What's happening?
I don't know.
How would you describe this for audio purposes? There's, right now, I'm embracing
there's two hands. There's two hands holding.
I love your sunglasses.
This one's shaking, but this one's just holding.
I want the best of all possible worlds.
There was formality and there was love.
That sums up our relationship, I feel.
That's right.
It's good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, too. I'm not going to let you see the windows to my soul, though. I'm going to wear these sunglasses to keep a cool air of separation.
What did George Stephanopoulos do to you this morning that you're hiding behind those shades, dude?
George did very little to me. We talked for about 20 seconds. Most of the 20 seconds was about Touched by an Angel.
I saw.
There wasn't a lot about,
I confess, yeah. I watched.
You saw.
If you'd be so kind, bring in the mic. You know how to do this, buddy.
You want this tight? You want this tight and intimate?
Thanks, my friend.
Boom, baby, boom, baby, bing, bing, boom.
This is just for us. We've had a lot of fun over the years.
I've never been here in your private office.
The inner sanctum.
The officina.
It's just you and me in here.
I see you're a fan of The Color of Money, one of my favorite Martin Scorsese films.
I always feel like it's an underrated one.
It is underrated. It's a sequel to The Hustler, which is one of my all-time favorite movies, and it does not disappoint. It's like, you know, it's right there with The Hustler in terms of drama and intrigue and just plain straight up entertainment.
And I also feel like, you know, often they say like Newman got the Oscar for it, and it was like they almost feel like it was like a make good for his career. No, he fucking rocked it.
He crushed it. And Tom Cruise's best work, some say.
Have you and Marty ever talked?
You know, we've never exchanged pleasantries, but one time he was involved in a charity and he or one of his people sent a request that a bunch of celebrities draw pictures about Christmas to raise money for this charity. I think it was Feeding Hungry Kids or something. And I worked very hard. And I was like, okay, I'm going to make this a Scorsese Christmas. I know what he wants.
This is your audition tape.
And so I drew a beautiful picture of Satan Claus. And I thought it was clever because it's just one letter changed make Satan instead of Santa.
Yeah, I get it.
It's the same letters, in fact. It's just moved around a jambalaya.
No, you're right. Yeah.
And I sent it over. It was Satan Claus, and he was being pulled by a bunch of like gargoyle monsters instead of reindeer.
Right.
And it just looked pretty badass.
It sounds amazing.
It was pretty bitchin'. It wasn't just a scribble. It was like I took time. I got shading on there and colors. And it was returned to me. And they said, yeah, no, we can't do it. It's a children's charity.
Children and Satan don't go well together, generally speaking.
Yeah. I don't even think Scorsese ever saw the drawing, so I don't want to blame him.
He
would have loved it. It was made for him. And maybe in the back of my mind, I thought, when he sees this, he's going to put me in his next movie. But then he just got Jonah Hill instead. Because he's younger and funnier. I don't blame him. I'd get Jonah Hill, too.
Not true. Congratulations, in earnestness. I have... I spoke to you in Sundance. I saw the D-Train. I love the D-Train, truly.
You.
I also got a chance to watch the first couple episodes of The Brink. Crazy, amazing.
Thank you.
As soon as I heard about that one, I was like all in.
Yeah.
You know, little Doctor Strange glove-ish meets Ishtar. And I mean that as a compliment. I liked Ishtar. I'm one of those.
Now, do you think that he wore a strange glove in Doctor Strange glove?
He did, as a matter of fact, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Now that you mention it, he did.
Are you doing double duty right now on the press tour, or are you mostly on the D-Train right now?
I'm keeping it clean, strictly D-Train, and here's why. I think it muddies the issue when actors go out and talk about two upcoming projects.
Got it.
I'm going to go around and do all this stuff for that show when it's time for that show. I don't like piggybackers. I'm like, stop stowing away on this D-Train, you hobo. And you come around when you're... when your time has come. That's like a month from now. Right. I would never promote a movie a month before it comes out because it's just too far out.
Right.
People don't want to hear about what you're doing in a month.
No.
They want to hear what should I do this weekend?
Yeah, they want to, because we can talk about
what
something.
What are we going to buy tickets
out?
To a thing a month out?
Yeah, we're denying them. They want immediate gratification, especially
in
2015.
You can't even set your TiVo to a month ahead.
I wish you could. I would do that. Do you set your TiVo? I really, this is a big thing for me every week. Mm-hmm. I immediately, as soon as like the weekend hits, I'm like, I schedule the whole next week. I go in hard.
Yeah.
I scroll through everything. I make sure I tape the talk shows I want to see.
Yeah.
If a Jack Black is on a show, I'm recording that.
Thank you.
Are you a big TiVo-er?
I do, but I don't go way ahead in advance. In the morning, if I think of it, I'll be like, okay, let me just quickly see who's going to be on the talk shows. Like you say, that's a good way to go. This month, I just block TiVo'd all Lettermans. Doesn't matter who's on, because he's almost gone, and he's such a national treasure, and I want every last drop, because the thing is, people think, oh, well, I can always go back and watch the old episodes. No. With these talk shows, you need to watch them on the night that they came out, maybe the next day if you TiVo'd it.
Yeah.
Because they immediately lose some of their juicy sauce.
Yeah.
The talk shows like Letterman, you need to get them right out of the oven. And this is the last week where it's you, the me. Last couple weeks where you can get them hot David Letterman straight out of the oven.
It's really upsetting, actually. Last night, as we taped this last night, they had like the primetime special. I watched that.
Yeah.
I'm exactly like you. I mean, I grew up with
So you watched Dave last night?
I watched the primetime special, which was like a retrospective.
Oh my God.
And I watched the opening, which had Will did a little Harry Carey.
Oh my God.
I haven't watched the rest of it yet.
That's amazing. Great. So you didn't get to see me on Jimmy Fallon last night?
I haven't seen that yet. That's not an edit in the audio.
Yeah, you made your choice.
Well, I don't blame you. You totally sucked me into that.
David Letterman special. And then you lied and said that when you see that I'm going to be on a thing that you tape it, and not this time.
It must be on the DVR.
All about the other guys.
Do you think I make a point of recording GMA every morning?
No, only if, you know, Will Ferrell is on another channel, would you not?
Is it you mentioned the Satan and the children and perhaps not being appropriate for kids? You have an interesting career in that you have a major, you've got the Kung Fu Pandas, you've got the Goosebumps coming out.
Yeah.
You are a icon for children the world over, and you also are able to do some pretty subversive shit, including the D Train.
Yeah,
is that something that was ever a concern? Is that does Team Black ever say, dude, you can't do a movie where you do that with James Marsden because Kung Fu Panda 7's coming?
Oh, yeah. You know, actually, yeah, that is a consideration. I'm like, wait a second. How's this going to play when, but I know that the world doesn't really do that. You can do things for different audiences and it's okay. It works. I've done it before. And I can do it again. I just, you know, when something cool comes along, you do it.
Yeah.
There's not enough cool things to say, you know, tiptoe around the tulips. Not for me anyway. When I see gold, I mine it.
You don't care.
Damn the torpedoes.
That's your motto.
Yeah.
Do you have a tattoo? Would you tattoo that? If you had to tattoo a credo on yourself, do you have any tattoos?
I don't have any tattoos. Damn the torpedoes.
That's kind of lame, actually. Oh, the tattoo.
Where would you put it? On your butt or on your dick?
Wow.
Well, damn.
Apparently you're better down than I am.
This torpedo.
How could you even fit all? I mean,
then you'd be telling your dick to go to hell.
Why no tattoos?
I just never found one that I thought, wow, this really encapsulates who I am. It just seems like forever. I'm very tentative when it comes to forever.
Right.
It's like picking movies or picking things or picking, you know, loved ones. You got to pick wisely. And I just like, well, man, if you pick a tattoo that it sucks, you're stuck with it forever. Yeah, I could never pull the trigger.
So what does that apply also to films? Do you act on instinct? Do you labor over it when the offer comes around?
I do labor over it and I do flip flop. But once I commit, I commit. Yeah. I never pull out.
Wow. Let's talk.
But if I did get a tattoo,
yeah,
there were a couple of candidates.
Okay.
I was thinking it'd be cool. Did you ever see Fantasy Island?
Yes.
Remember the little guy that would say Duplane?
Hervé Villechaize, of course. Yeah.
What character did he play?
Wait, was he tattooed? No.
He was tattooed.
He was tattooed.
So I was thinking it would be cool to get a tattoo of tattoo on my ass.
And you could get like almost life size. You could get a small scale back. And
when you say, have you seen my tattoo? You're saying there's a double meaning there. I thought that would be pretty rad. And I also was thinking it would be cool to get a little devil. A cute little devil.
You have some preoccupation with the dark one, don't you?
Yeah, but also I just think, I like to think of myself as a little devil. All right, I'm not going to say it anymore. I'm sorry. I can feel your audience getting nauseous.
That's my stomach grumbling. I did my requisite research because you can never do it. Here are a couple things that struck me last night in reading up and watching some video of the Jack Black. One, I feel intimidated because I feel like this is the follow-up podcast to when you and Doug Benson did your thing a few months back.
Oh, my God.
Which I watched in its entirety last night, which is amazing.
Wow, thank you.
So for those that don't know, you got high with Doug.
I did get high with Doug. I got Doug with High.
That's the name of the show. Not to promote another podcast, but you guys need to go seek this out because it's amazing. Was there any regret immediate? It felt like you were going through something.
Look, there was never any question that I was going to do it because Doug Benson, brilliant comedian, agreed to be in my festival. I have a comedy festival called Festival Supreme. I asked him to do it as a favor to me, and he said, yes, I will. And my policy is anyone that says yes to the festival, anything that is asked of me, I will do.
It's dangerous.
And so I asked him to be in the festival, and it was quid pro quo, and he was like, will you be on my podcast getting Doug with High? And I was like, oh, my God. Okay, let me just tell you, dude. I am such a lightweight. I don't know what happened to my body chemistry, but I barely smoke anymore because I get super paranoid and I will not be a good guest. And he was like, I will take you as you are. I will take you as it comes. I was like, I will do it for you. Done. So it was done. I was coming on and I was thinking, you know, it's 50-50. Sometimes I'll smoke a J or bong load and I will have the best fucking time. So I was like, this, you know what? I'm not going to be a negative Nelly. I'm going to go on the show. I'm going to smoke some bong loads and I'm going to have a good fucking time. It's going to be really funny. We're going to get off some weird tangents. Unfortunately, I knew pretty quickly, and he was just smoking like a chimney, and I felt a lot of peer pressure to keep up with him.
Right.
But it quickly became apparent that it was going to be the other kind of high, the kind where I can't form a sentence. I get super terrified, and I get up in my head, and I'm like the part of your brain that is the communication center,
yep,
just basically shuts down, and then it's like that's it, and you go slightly comatose, and it was a living nightmare for the next 20 minutes, and I actually
have you watched the back
in preparation for this. Yes, I did. It was tough to watch. I told my wife, who was there off camera, the safe word is cantaloupe,
right,
or whatever it was.
Yeah, I think it was cantaloupe I watched.
And she was instructed to come in and pull me out and save me and rescue me.
She didn't.
And she did not do it because she didn't know if I really meant it when I said cantaloupe. And she's like, also, what am I going to do? Am I going to actually just stop the interview and pull you out? Is that going to help you in any way? Or is that going to actually make it worse? But here's the thing. I've talked to Doug about it, and I said, I want to come back on. And I want to come back on, and I want to win. I want to beat this thing. Because you knock me off my stoner horse, I will get back on. Yeah. And I'm going to train. I'm going to do bong loads.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go on there, and I'm going to fight my inner demons, and I'm going to slay that dragon.
You know, as we tape this, it's Cinco de Mayo. I feel like I should have brought margaritas.
Here's another thing, though.
Yeah.
Doug could have helped me a little bit more.
What could he have done?
Just like, my good buddy's having a bad trip. Let me help him out here. Let me guide him out. Maybe with some relaxing guided imagery.
Yeah.
And instead, he just sort of ridiculed me and then was kind of like annoyed with me and just made it shittier. Thanks a lot, Doug. But be that as it may.
Right.
But
you're going back. You're going to conquer it.
It's like, man, it's like Pacquiao Mayweather part two. It's inevitable, right?
I think so. I'll watch. I'll be there.
No matter how bad it goes, you get $100 million, right?
It brings up a point that ties into our past, which is that I know you weren't necessarily doing publicity for that one, but like when you go make the rounds, I feel like you make the best of it. You turn it into fun for yourself. You'll do crazy shit. We've done some crazy shit.
Yeah.
You see it as an opportunity rather than, I mean, it is a job, obviously. Yeah. But I mean, is that fair to say that like when you have to do the rounds and you're like, okay,
I just see it as an important part of the job.
Yeah.
I mean, we gotta get people to come to our movies and, to think that, you know, you can just go and make the movie and then your job is done is naive.
Yeah.
That's the thing that you do for free. We got paid to go out and like, now granted, I didn't get paid to do this movie. So what the fuck am I doing here? And the answer is I'm proud of the movie. So yeah. I want people to see it.
That's
so I go
sign.
Around and do it. But I feel like it's good in this context when I'm here with a cool dude.
Mm.
Land down some knowledge about not just the movie, but life in general. These are the fun ones. When it gets crappy is when it goes on the conveyor belt and you're doing just straight up junket.
Yeah.
And it's one after the other, after the other, after the other. And you can't help it because if you're working on a line, what do you call that line?
Conveyor belt? The assembly line?
The assembly line.
Yes.
We become robots. All people that work on assembly lines all over the world, it's a dehumanizing thing, even for actors. Assembly line junkets, you're going to start getting really lame answers. And doesn't matter how gung-ho you are and excited to give everyone a good interview, after a couple hours of the same questions coming at you, it's going to turn... Yeah, so I try to avoid those whenever possible.
It's a crazy, bizarre environment. You know, actually, I meant to tell you this at one point. You know, our mutual collaborator, Amanda Lund, did a little pilot thing for me that we wrote up about the junket circuit.
Oh, my God.
She played a correspondent in the junket world and killed it.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Amazing.
What's that called?
It's called Correspondence, actually.
Correspondence.
Yeah, soon to be hopefully on a platform near you. We'll see. Yeah, thank you, buddy.
Knock on Formica.
So, have you ever pulled an RDJ? Have you ever walked out of an interview? Did you see that recently where he had the little...
I saw that, yeah. I thought it was brilliant marketing. How'd they do on their opening weekend?
Not bad.
Mission accomplished. You believed that? Sucker.
Smarter than all of us. Ever been pissed off in an interview enough to walk out?
I'm trying to think if there's ever been something where I was like, you motherfucker. Not really. I don't have that kind of sweet baggage that could lead to that.
Yeah. What's your button? What pushes your button? What's the topic I should not bring up?
I don't know, but I think if I were really trying to do some verbal jiu-jitsu and get out of a thing, I wouldn't just get up and walk out. That's what you do if you actually are looking for extra YouTube hits.
Right.
I think the thing to do is just, I don't know, next question. Next question is the magical elixir. It works every time. And if they just stay on it, I'm like, oh, man, is that it?
That's all I got.
All right, well, good interview. You gotta shake hands and keep it all good and just walk out like it's just a normal interview.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about... here's what I'm curious about. I always like to talk to people about like the films, the pop culture touchstones when they were growing up that they like were obsessed with. Like, what was the movie, the movies, the actor, the actors that you were worshiping at the altar of when young Jack Black was age?
John Malkovich was the kingpin. Love John Malkovich. I saw he was the actor's actor when I was growing up. I mean, in the 80s, if you were a theater major, then that was the pinnacle because he was coming out of Steppenwolf Theater Chicago, and he did True West, and you could only see it on PBS if you didn't make it out to see it in Chicago or New York. But you could tell that he was on another level. He was just realer than everyone else, and he was more peculiar than everyone else.
Yeah,
and he was dangerous and hilarious and real and just relaxed. And there's just something magic about his performances.
It's
right. And he never hit the big time. I mean, he had big roles.
Yeah.
But he never like hit the mainstream like, oh my God, he is our best actor.
Right.
He never had that.
He's one of those that will have that Michael Keaton moment where like he'll get another great role and he'll kill it and be like, oh wait.
That theater stuff always kind of flies under the radar.
Yeah.
But True West and then Death of a Salesman, who's fucking incredible. And then Dangerous Liaisons, amazing. In the Line of Fire, beautiful. Just, these were the things that I was doing. I was doing a lot of John Malkovich impersonations from 1988 to 1999
was all the way up to being John Malkovich. That's 99.
Yeah.
So here's actually something that occurs to me when you talk about theater. Have you done Broadway? You've never done Broadway, have you?
I've never been on Broadway, but I did do off Broadway at the public Joe Papp Public Theater with a theater production with the Actors Gang, Los Angeles Troupe, Tim Robbins' company that he started in the 80s. And It was a show called Carnage, and it was all about televangelism.
Okay.
And it was really good.
Yeah.
It was really funny and weird and timely. And Frank Rich, the New York Times theater columnist, just gave us the worst review imaginable. And from what I could tell, he just hated us for being from Hollywood.
Right.
And daring to bring our juvenile, sorry, excuse for theater to the East Coast. He's such a pompous piece of shit.
How do you feel about
Frank,
though?
Oh, my God.
Though,
Frank not... Rich. He just thinks he's the fucking
how about
arbiter of...
How about Ben Brantley? He's the new guy. Maybe if you bring something new, you got
a new,
new guy.
I don't know. But you know
town.
What? In fairness, though, I actually really did enjoy that review because it was so mean. And it was so... He's good at writing a mean review.
Yeah.
And he just carved us up. And spit us out, and you kind of would rather have a review like that than one that just writes you off, but one that takes the time to destroy you. It's like, you really care.
So have you considered going back to theater?
Yeah, you know, I get a lot of that live juice from Tenacious D.
When we
perform live, we do mix in some sketches, and there's a lot of theatricality, and we get that love from the crowd, and it's not dissimilar.
Right.
Wait a second. There was like three negatives in there. Not dissimilar? Yeah, no, that's
so,
right.
It's so
not
similar.
It's not dissimilar. Yeah.
Right, right.
Anyway.
Okay, so you mentioned Malkovich. What about comedy-wise? Were you a big comedy geek, like in terms of stand-up or movies?
Yeah, I loved Gene Wilder comes to mind. He rode the line of crazy, of, you know, just insanity. I was like, wait a second. He's super passionate or he's, you know, mentally unstable.
Young Frankenstein is pretty much a perfect movie, right?
Incredible. Also, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
Some
of the stuff with Pryor is pretty good.
Amazing. Yeah.
Stir Crazy. And
yeah.
I was like Silver Streak.
Mm-hmm. And also Peter Sellers. I loved Peter Sellers.
Yeah.
So, his stuff like Lolita and Dr. Strangelove, just very influential.
So here's the other thing that struck me in reading up, and obviously like we've talked a lot about a lot of recent films, but like looking at the first, I don't even know, 10, 15 years of your career before, you know, you were a character actor, right? Like, I mean, you really, before, I guess High Fidelity put you in a certain place as a supporting actor, and then you got a shot to kind of be the guy and have been the guy ever since in a lot of things. But like you were in so many movies that I loved, like in like the 90s and stuff, in like these like small, bizarre, weird roles. Like, was that an exciting badge of honor at the time? Like, I have this throwaway thing in Demolition Man. I'm this guy in this. And was it satisfying or was it like, oh God, when do I get my turn?
No, I was always happy to be working. I never felt like, God, yeah, when's my ship going to come in? Because it was a miracle that I was paying the rent.
Yeah.
And I was having fun. It was my dream to be acting in things. And in those days, basically all of the 90s, I was going back and forth from little roles in TV and film and the Actors Gang theater company.
Right.
So, you know, even though I wasn't getting all of my artistic jollies from those little glorified extra roles.
Yeah.
I was getting some good experience in the theater. And when I ran out of money, which happened a lot, I would just go back and live at my mom's all the way through my 20s.
Really?
Yeah. My mom was very supportive.
Did she ever say maybe
you need something to fall back on? Never once.
Really?
Never once.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
One that I hadn't seen in a long time, I watched your scene in The Jackal, which is remarkable.
Oh, thank you.
You are
sprawl
obliterated by Bruce Willis in such a graphic,
yeah,
horrific way.
He was a bad mofo.
What do you recall of that? It's really a dehumanizing scene.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a scene where we're in my sort of workshop where we're talking about building the gun.
Right.
And I say, I can do that for you. And then there's another scene where we're in my workshop and I'm saying, you know, the only thing is this is going to cost more than I originally say. And that was when I sealed my fate.
Yeah.
And I kind of deserved to be destroyed because
no one deserves to go that
without
like that.
Renegotiate with that guy. That guy's clearly a psycho killer. I'm an idiot. I'm great with making crazy guns, but not so much with, you know. So anyway, yeah. What was it like when he shot me? That scene was intense because first, before he kills me, I run through a swamp for, you know, portion of the scene.
It's not the coolest run.
And that first run, my pants were falling down and I was so exhausted from running through the swamp. Take one. I was like, I just need a breather. And then it's like, Jack, we need to do it right away again. Michael Caton Jones, the director, is British. And I was like, I can't do it right now. Just give me 15 minutes. I'll be good to go again. And he's like, bring in the stuntman. And so most of the run in the swamp is my stuntman pretending to pull up his pants. And then, yeah, then he shot me to death.
Did you learn something in watching? You watch someone like Bruce, you're in The Cable Guy, which obviously has like a second and third life years later as a classic. Mm. But like seeing, before you get an opportunity to be the guy in movie and to see how others carry themselves for good or for bad, did you take something away from that when it was your turn to be the guy? Did you feel like is there something incumbent on you as an actor when you're number one on the call sheet and you're carrying the load?
Did I learn anything from like Bruce Willis or
Jim or Sly or Jim Carrey, or whatever, all these?
Or Sly? No, not really. you know, you
maybe
always,
not the best three examples.
You always try to, yeah. You always try to, my thing is always just try to be one of the guys. Let's not think about the order, the pecking order on the call sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully that's what I've done.
Why are you uncredited in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer?
Oh, maybe I didn't want the credit that they were giving me.
Oh, there was a description. There was like,
maybe I was like 15th and I was like, well, how about uncredited? I don't know. Honestly, I don't remember.
Right.
Yeah, but sometimes it's better to be uncredited than to be credited.
Yeah, it stands really, out. I wouldn't be asking really otherwise if you were
slot.
Exactly. I know we're scattered all around, but another one that always comes up is Heat Vision and Jack. Anyone that's seen it is obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Has there ever been? Here's my curiosity in this realm where like everything is resurrected. Have you guys ever talked about like trying to resurrect it in some form?
Yeah, there was talk of doing a Heat Vision and Jack animated series, which I said, absolutely. You guys get it going. I'm there.
What happened?
I don't know. Maybe it's still in the works, but I would have loved to have done that TV series. It would have been so fun.
Yeah.
Dan Harmon and Rob Schraub are geniuses. Seriously. I don't know if you've seen Community, but
of course,
guy's brilliant. And that was, you know, it was a combination of my favorite things. It was like the talking car, but it was a talking motorcycle from Kit. What was that show called?
Yeah, Knight Rider.
Of course. And the $6 million man, the astronaut that crashed and was put back together. And now he is the smartest man on Earth. It was like the perfect show.
Do you remember there was like a ripoff of, I feel like there was a ripoff of Knight Rider too. Do you remember Street Hawk? This just popped in my brain.
I never saw Street Hawk.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Was it one season? Was it one?
I think it was one a one season wonder. Yeah.
I feel like someone has told me about Night Hawk.
Street Hawk. Don't combine Knight Rider and Street Hawk.
Okay,
yeah,
God.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't very good.
Street Hawk.
It's no Knight Rider.
Hawk of the streets.
I mean, Knight Rider. It really, I was going to say it holds up. It probably doesn't hold up. But any show where you can have like the evil doppelganger of the lead with just a goatee.
Street Hawk would just like prey on the vermin of the city.
Right. And there was a guy, it was the guy from Murphy Brown, like the bald guy was like the eyes and ears like back, you know, in the headquarters that was like helping him out.
Yeah.
It must be unwatchable now. I can only imagine. I would say go to YouTube and watch it, but I don't want to waste your time.
No, I'm going to watch it. Street Hawk. That sounds hilarious.
So something like D-Train, when, like, is that sort of where your head's at in terms of comedic sensibilities now? Would that have appealed to you 5 years ago? Do you find that, like, what you found funny 10, 20 years ago is what's funny today?
Well, I like those kinds of projects now. Just because they're original, you know, and I liked the message. It's not a message movie, but I liked where it was coming from, you know,
yeah,
politically a little bit, you know, there's a message that's kind of like, stop worrying about what people think about you. Right. We're all so obsessed and worried, especially now in the Facebook age, like what's your status and profile?
How many followers do you have?
Yeah. And also, I liked it that there was like a bisexual character in this movie that is kind of a hero.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't see it very often.
Yeah.
It was like, I want to be part of that. This is badass. And it was funny in a super dark way. And I don't laugh very often. You kind of have to surprise me. You have to shock me a little bit. And yeah. You have to get me in a way that I haven't been gotten before.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt when I read the script. And, you know, that's what I look for.
You reteaming to a degree with Mike White on this one. I mean, if you look at a, you know, a touchstone, like I walked out of it being like, well, have you seen Chuck and Buck? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Like, then if you like that, you're in.
Totally.
That's subversive.
Yeah. It's dark and it's unconventional and it's not for everyone. Some people are going to go see it and they're going to be pissed off. And maybe that's why I like it too.
Yeah.
And I like it that it's not for everyone. Well, you know what's tough about it is that the main character is not likable.
Right.
When you come down to business and talk about that, that's a tough place to start from.
Yeah.
Because what makes movies hits is when the main character is, you know, you relate to him and you love him and you root for him. And that's not the case here. But that's also why I liked it. It's like, I don't see that.
Yet, like, I mean, looking at a lot of the stuff that you've done, stuff that Will's done, other successful people in that space, what's gotten you by, I feel like, is playing somewhat unlikable people and being able to kind of like have a natural likability and
well, that's the that lovable loser.
Yeah.
This is a different kind of loser.
Right.
This is the hateable loser.
Hateable loser.
And this is like the character that you see in a movie that you go, oh, that fucking turd. And you see him get stomped by the hero and you go, yes.
Right.
So this is the movie about that guy, that turd. That
we follow that guy
usually,
around.
And you know, yeah, there's something very fascinating about it to me.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's going to be a lot of people out there like me looking for that kind of strange movie.
What are the scripts that you get now, and how depressing is it in terms of like the small percentage of things that make you?
I mean, obviously, I get a lot of like dad things now because I'm a dad, a famous dad. So those things are always pretty mind numbing and lame. The movie about being a father is like, oh boy, that's got to be really special,
right?
There's got to be something extra cool about it. A lot of Santa Claus offers to be Santa Claus.
Is that true?
But now this is new grandpa's Santa. This Santa has got a screw loose. Whatever. There's always some new spin on a Christmas tale because they see dollar signs in
it. Right.
But I'm just not interested in any kind of Santa.
Are you a practicing Jewish man?
I am a Jewish man, and I haven't been to synagogue before I had my kids go to a Hebrew school. I hadn't been to synagogue since I was 13 years old and got my bar mitzvah. Been a very bad Jew.
I wasn't even bar mitzvah, dude.
But now that my kids are, you know, going to Hebrew school, it's like I'm back in. Just because there were some things that I liked about it.
Yeah.
And I was straight up with them. I was like, just so you know, I'm an atheist, but there are some cool things. I remember I have some good memories from Hebrew school. So I'd be stoked if I could get my kids into this school. And they were like, you are just the kind of Jew we're looking for.
Are you ready for your kids aren't close to bar mitzvah age yet, but
nope.
but that's going to come. And nowadays, I can only imagine what the scene is like for a bar mitzvah. That's going to be like
an
Avengers themed bar mitzvah in your future or something.
Who knows? I don't know. That's up to them, though. I'm not going to say you have to get a bar mitzvah. If they want to do it, they can do it.
You're you're a guy that another thing I appreciate is you. We kind of alluded to this before, but like, it doesn't matter if it's film or TV or web. Like, if it's cool, if it's fun, if it's new, if it strikes your fancy, you're in.
Yeah,
and that applies to, like, you know, Tenacious D is a full time thing for you and totally. Kyle as well. Is that something, again, just like the criteria is just keep me interested, make it like I don't want to get bored.
Sorry, just taking off my sunglasses.
Are you having a stroke? Are you okay? What
just happened? No, like I'm not having a stroke. It was time to get serious.
Okay, we're going.
It was just time to, like, really be present. Time really? To be here with you now. Around the rest of your dressing room. Oh, Back to the Future. Signs.
Huh?
Michael J. Fox and who else?
That's Zemeckis.
Holy shit balls.
Holy crap. Can you identify? I'm sure you know this guy. Who do you think painted that one, that little thing?
Wait a second. So is that I just guessed that was Michael Fox.
It is. Yeah, yeah. That's correct. Another perfect movie, right?
Yeah. And so you need Christopher Lloyd.
Definitely need Lloyd. Definitely need Crispin Glover is going to be tough.
You got to get Crispin Glover.
He's going to be a tough
Leia
one.
Leia Thompson would be a bonus. That'd be nice. Wouldn't be bad to get Biff.
Yeah, Thomas something. Yeah. I think he's a comic now. He's a stand-up comic.
I'm impressed.
What about
not too shabby.
You recognize this over here on the right? This guy?
Yeah, he looks very familiar.
Come on, dude. Don't
Say anything. Don't say anything. Outlander.
No, that's a great guess.
Who is it?
It's a sequel. It's a comedy sequel.
Don't tell me. Back. Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Viggo the Carpathian.
The sequel. Yeah.
Where do you come down? I've had this conversation with a lot of people. Where do you come down on the sequel? Decent, watchable, shitty.
Here's what I have to say. Forgettable. I don't remember very much about it. Was it great?
It's good. Honestly, I stand by it as half of a really good movie. It kind of falls apart under a lot of special effects in the second half. Obviously, the first one's, again, a perfect movie.
I love that first one.
You did a reading a few years back. You got to play Ray, didn't you?
I did.
Was that amazing?
It was the character played by...
It was Aykroyd, right?
Dan Aykroyd. Yeah. And I had a really good time with that character. I don't want to brag, but I think I found some things that Dan Aykroyd might have missed. I think he was too close to the material because he wrote it.
Right.
And I think I put some shades on it.
you were
that always... maybe weren't intended, but maybe gave it a little more depth.
You were always one of those guys in the many
maybe
years of development.
Maybe three-dimensionalized it a little bit.
Wow.
I'm sorry, Dan.
You're throwing down against Dan Aykroyd.
I love Dan Aykroyd. I'm just being an asshole.
You were one of those guys that everybody would always ask about the Ghostbusters movie for years. So it was like, right? Like, was there ever an actual conversation with Ivan or anybody?
It might have been floated. I don't think there was ever a real offer. But yeah, that was in the ether for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening now. Are there two of them? A woman's one and a man's one? Is that really happening? Something got destroyed. There is not going to be two Ghostbusters.
I don't know. You know, everything has to be a world building. Like, you know, there's a spinoff and prequel happening simultaneously.
It would be amazing if there were two.
Is there, another amazing thing about your career is you've been able to be in films that maybe early.
Who's going
to
be the asshole that does the male Ghostbusters now and is like, yeah, fuck the ladies. This is man's onlys. We's keeping it male the ways it should be.
I don't want to be in that movie now. Cross him off the
list. Fuck women. We rule as it should be.
That's how dudes talk when the ladies are not around. Have you ever felt miscast in a film? You've pushed yourself into some places where people didn't think necessarily you were the right guy initially, but you made it work, I feel like. And things like, you know, in Baumbach movies, you're in, you know, The Holiday. Like, these are things on paper. You're like, wait, Jack's going to fit into that? Did you feel out of place in any of those things?
I always feel like I've been miscast. I can always think of people that would have done the role better than me when I get cast in a thing. And I often tell the director, you know who you should try to get, and drives my agent crazy. I want to try to sabotage my own thing. But I don't know how to answer that because it's a thing I always feel. There's no movies where I was like, oh, this one especially I'm not right for.
Right.
It's always...
All right, last thing before I release you out. If I get, I give you $100 million to fund any project tomorrow. Is there a dream? Is there something that like you've been struggling to get off the ground? Because I know, as I said before, you're always juggling a lot of different things. What's like the one that hasn't come to fruition yet that you need to get off the ground?
Wait a second. What are we talking about?
Just anything. A project. Is there a project that you want, that you're desperate to get going that hasn't happened for whatever reason?
Yeah. The Charlie Kaufman script he wrote called Frank or Francis is the best script I've ever written. And it's so weird.
It's kind of a musical bent too, right?
Yeah, it's a musical. And who knows if it'll ever get made. I hope there's an eccentric billionaire that wants to make a masterpiece. Damn the torpedoes, because it deserves to be made with or without me. Yeah. Preferably with me.
Are we going to see some Tenacious D in the near future? What's the latest?
That's the plan.
Okay.
And in my heart, I'm writing it as we speak.
Oh, that's
but in reality, we haven't even started writing. We have talked a lot about it, though. Conceptually, it's really ready to be written. We just need to carve out some time.
Are you talking about music or a
the plan is to write the album this year.
Okay.
You know, there is a plan for a movie and animated webisodes, but it always has to start with the next record. And so we're gonna do some writing this year.
Yeah,
it's just I know how slow we are. We probably won't finish this year, but right. You never know.
What's the lesson learned out of that film, out of the Tenacious D Pick of Destiny film?
The lesson learned: always record. Is that the one? Or did you have a specific lesson in mind?
No, I'm just saying we all loved it, but maybe it didn't find the audience that you thought it demanded and needed.
Oh, what's the lesson learned from the failure of Pick of Destiny?
I didn't want to put it that way.
The answer to that is, let me see if this is a dream first. I see you've got one of these spinning tops here from Inception.
Oh my!
It's still spinning.
Jack.
Holy shit, this isn't real. We're not having this conversation.
What a sad
what
dream
is it
to
that
have
I learned from
to
the
be on
failure
a 45-minute podcast
in the Pick of Destiny.
It's not going to stop.
You know, one of the things that I learned, it's still spinning, was that the musical section at the beginning of the movie was in many ways the most captivating and incredible part. And maybe the thing to do was just to never stop singing. Make it a true musical.
Just go for it.
Yeah, but that would have been so fucking hard. Because that song at the beginning was hard to write, and we really kicked its ass and knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
I don't know that we could deliver 90 minutes of nonstop magical music magic.
If any two gentlemen could.
It's a tall order. Yeah. Three gentlemen. Liam Lynch helped write that.
There you go. Well, thank you for stopping by, buddy. Congratulations, honestly. You know, when we talked at Sundance, I was not lying when I said it was my favorite film I saw there. It's subversive. It's bizarre. It's funny. It's got great performances. Marsden kills it, like, in a role I've never seen him. No one's ever seen him do.
I got to say, one of the best performances of the year. He's so goddamn good in the movie.
So check out The D Train. I know we're not going to talk about the future, but in a little while, watch The Brink, too, because it's pretty cool.
That's enough.
That's enough. Thanks for stopping by, man.
Thank you.
That's the show, guys. I'm Josh Horowitz. This has been Happy, Sad, Confused. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Hit me up on Twitter, Joshua Horowitz. Go over to wolfpop.com. Check out all the amazing shows over there. And most importantly, check back in next week for another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused.
Pop.
Pop?
Pop.
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 Wolf Pop is part of Midroll Media, executive produced by Adam Sachs, Matt Gourley, and Paul Scheer.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's pear.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.